On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
Hello and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Safer Podcast Network, presented in part by Joe Reed and Alcova Mortgage. Score your perfect home today. All right. We're taking a little bit of break from college baseball for this one. I know there's a lot of talk around UVA about that, but we're going to dip over into basketball over at JPJ, talk a little bit about the hoops and Ryan Odom's first team at UVA. And I got a great guest coming on today to talk about it. The doctor is in the house. I have Evan Miyakawa from evanmia.com. You've seen his analytics everywhere, cited on various sites throughout the college basketball season. You've seen them now in this transfer portal era. Evan, you're constantly just coming up with new stuff to dive into analytically. Thanks for joining the podcast today, man.
Yeah, glad to be here. Glad to talk some Virginia hoops. Obviously, this is going to be a very different kind of season. But, you know, there's a lot to talk about here. It's going to be a fresh start for a lot of people, so a lot to dig into.
A lot to talk about. I mean, there's only two players from last year's roster that is even on this team, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that. But just to start off with, I mean, you're kind of adapting your stuff in this kind of new era with the transfer portal and looking at all that. You got your transfer class rankings, UVA number 17 in the team class rankings right now. That's fourth among ACC schools. How did you kind of adapt to this whole transfer portal madness?
Well, to be honest, I think when my site really started going, so I started this site back in 2020, and it was initially just kind of a fun side project while I was working on getting my PhD in statistics at Baylor University. And I've always loved sports, specifically college basketball, and of course, having kind of a mathematical background. It's a very easy intersection of those two things. And so a lot of what I have always focused on from the beginning is player evaluation, using all the stats and data that we have available to get an assessment of the impact or value that any player is bringing to their team. So as I started really leaning into that was right when the transfer portal started becoming a thing that was not just like, here's like a third avenue for recruiting. It was actually, for a lot of teams, suddenly the main avenue for recruiting. And so I think the timing worked out really well because I've been able to be on the cutting edge of kind of publicly used, transfer portal analytics specifically. And a lot of what I do really fits that because I'm able to use all of these statistical measurements to predict, not just say how good has a player been, but how good will they be going forward. And so that has led to a lot of success, and a ton of teams use my site a lot during the offseason for transfer portal analytics, for figuring out what kinds of players they want to go after, and what sort of gems can they find that they otherwise wouldn't. And there's over 100 teams signed up for my site, and I know the transfer portal is a big reason why, and so it's been really cool to see that.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and it's hard. I think it's even harder to kind of rate and kind of analyze these guys coming out from different schools, mid majors. I mean, you've got guys coming from the JUCO, D2 ranks, and everything. It's hard to kind of rank these guys like you see these high school rankings. You know, it's a different formula, so that's why I don't put a lot of stock into transfer portal class rankings or transfer portal rankings at all, because one guy could be really high up on one guy's list, and that guy could be out of the top 100 on another list. So it's interesting. When you take kind of a bird's eye view of this Virginia class, what stands out to you?
Well, I think, Virginia's in a situation where we've seen this start to happen more and more with high major teams, especially when you have a coaching change, where you're not going to be able to return maybe any of the players that you had on the previous team. And that used to not be a thing. Even 2 years ago, I don't think we had ever seen a single high major team have to completely retool a roster from scratch. And then all of a sudden last season, we saw teams like Kentucky do it to good success, Louisville do it to good success, but a lot of other teams not do it well. USC, DePaul, Cal, like there's a bunch of other teams, and even teams with the same coach were still taking this approach of, hey, I can completely flip what I'm doing, and it's been kind of mixed success. Kansas State was a a big one last year where they spent a lot of money. They got some of the highest paid players in the portal. They didn't really come close to making an NCAA tournament. So it's been really hit or miss. And so I think for me, before you even look at any of the pieces, I just think the challenge in front of Virginia is tough in year one with a new head coach, because a lot of my research that I've done points to the fact that getting talent on your roster is important, but equally, if you really want to be competing for a Final Four, competing for a national championship, competing for a high major conference tournament or conference, you know, championship, you have to have some level of roster continuity. That's really what my research has shown. Not that you can't be successful without it, but it is a lot more difficult. And so when I look at this roster, I love a lot of the individual pieces, but big picture, I just for any team, not just Virginia, for any team that's in kind of this position, especially with a new head coach, I always am just a little bit cautious about how the first year will go. And really a lot of it is let's get a solid first year and then let's really build off of that into future seasons. And so, you know, regardless of whether this team makes the tournament or wins multiple games or where they finish in the ACC, I think you have to kind of understand the challenge ahead of them going into this year.
It's interesting we kind of get into that because I have it highlighted in my notes. You did an article, I think last year, and kind of updated it this year with the numbers and everything. It's, you know, how to build a roster in the new age of college basketball. And like your big 3 points there were, you know, fill your roster with good basketball players, number one. But then, like you said, returning players should account for at least 50% of the playing time. And the last one is prioritize recruiting players who at least play two seasons for you. For Virginia, you know, fill your roster with good basketball players. We think that they did that. Returning players didn't do that because of the coaching change and everything that goes along with that. But then prioritizing players that'll be there for at least two seasons with you, they did that and didn't do that to some extent there. You know, when you're looking at this roster and kind of how you've analyzed building a good roster in this new age, I guess, how does it fit into that?
Yeah, I do think there is a little bit of you have to choose which direction you're going. Sometimes in order to have the best first season possible, you have to get guys that are kind of these one-year rentals, right? So you look at some of the transfers that they've gotten where I think, you know, Ugonna Onyensu is probably only playing one season. Down Hall is only playing one season. Malik Thomas probably only playing one season. You have guys like this where it's like they are available. They're going to be proven. They're going to be a great value add, but then you're going to have to re-recruit that position next year. And so there, you have to take it and leave it some with these guys, because that's going to make your job next offseason much harder. Whereas if you're able to get a sophomore or junior through the portal, maybe they're not going to be quite as good this year. But, you know, you look at a team like Florida, who obviously the pinnacle of the sport right now, just won a national championship. And you look at what they were able to do. They retained a lot of the key talent from the previous years and then added a couple key pieces through the portal and through high school ranks to kind of raise that talent level. But these guys, a lot of them were transfers initially. Walter Clayton from Iona, but he stayed. Richard from Belmont, but he stayed for multiple years. And so, you know, Florida was not really in the national title conversation or even the SEC championship conversation until this year, but they had this multi-year plan and they delivered on it. And so, that is really, you know, when I see a team like Virginia, it's maybe finishing as a top 25 team in the sport this year is achievable, and that can give you a lot of success to recruit and get more resources and money, but also means you're going to have a harder job actually doing the re-recruiting next year. So it's kind of a pick your poison sort of deal. I don't envy any team that's in their spot, because like you mentioned, they don't really have a lot of a choice in choosing to re-recruit and bring guys back, because, you know, these guys almost never stay in these situations.
And you're kind of rebuilding the structure because, you know, you don't have the natural class progression of you got a couple seniors, juniors, and so on down. You're going to have to recreate that when you're building this roster from scratch. What have you seen, I guess, when you go back and you look at Louisville last year? That's the example that everyone wants to pull up right now for Virginia, because you saw them in the ACC. You saw what Pat Kelsey was able to do there. Kentucky is another example you mentioned there. When you look at those types of teams, what stood out about how they were able to make such a big jump so early?
Well, to be honest, I think most of it comes down to coaching. I do think that they got rosters good enough to make a tournament, but I do not think it was a done deal that they were going to do that. And when you looked at Louisville with the roster they got, and then the fact that they had multiple huge, either season ending or multiple months out injuries of guys who were unavailable. When you looked at this team in mid-December, I personally was ready to write this season off for Louisville and say, you know, they were good enough to probably make a tournament when they were healthy, but now they've lost all these pieces. They only have like seven healthy guys right now. Like, just, you know, write the season off as a loss, make some solid steps, and then progress to year two. So you have to give Pat Kelsey and his staff a ton of credit, and I really do think the coaching element of that, if you threw in a different head coach, I don't think they're anywhere near as successful as what they were. And so I do think that the biggest takeaway for me is, like, yes, they did get good rosters, but also it takes a certain kind of coach and coaching staff to get an entirely new roster of all these pieces for them to gel and develop an offensive and a defensive identity quickly enough and to adapt to this level of play. So I think a lot of it really comes down to coaching in those situations. And so that's obviously the hope with Virginia and with Ryan Odom. I think, you know, there is a lot of optimism that he can do something similar, but it's certainly not a guarantee.
I was going to ask, what do you think of Ryan Odom? I mean, he was kind of the obvious hire right down the road in Richmond. And, you know, as soon as Tony Bennett retired, he was one of the first names that was mentioned for that job. And then it just kind of came to fruition by the season's end. His teams have kind of played similar styles, but he's adapted a little bit from stop to stop. What do you make of just how Ryan Odom's kind of his play style and also just his coaching acumen through the years?
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend that I like have a huge opinion one way or the other on him. I do think a lot of times the most successful hires are the ones that are maybe not the most sexy. Like, you look at Kentucky last year, they ended up with Mark Pope, who had Kentucky ties, but he was, at least according to the public, not one of the top two or three or maybe even four names that Kentucky fans wanted as their head coach. But obviously, he's turned out to be, at least through one year, the exact right fit. And I think a lot of times it's coaches like this. I think Ryan Odom falls in this camp, who often end up being the best bang for your buck or the most reliable options. And so I think he has all of the qualities to be very successful and maybe be a lot better than what people think he might be, even though he's not one of the biggest, you know, name hires that a high major got this season. If it's the right fit and he understands the culture and all that, you know, that's often just as important. So, you know, I don't necessarily won't stake my claim on him one way or the other, but I think it's if people like him who often be the most successful that people are like, hey, this should have been obvious to us at the beginning of this.
That's funny that you mentioned Mark Pope, because literally the day after the hire got announced, we came on this podcast and people have heard me say it before, but it was a very similar feel for a hire, because he talks about Kentucky, you know, the Scott Drew was their big name, that they went after other big names, but Mark Pope was just kind of the guy that was there that made sense. You know, he had a good track record at BYU. Was it outstanding? No, but he made sense. He was an alum and all that. And Ryan Odom, very similarly, just he had the connections, and, you know, that's kind of how the pieces got put together. One thing that's gotten a lot of talk from Virginia fans with your website specifically is the estimated NIL spending. And I know you've had to do a little bit of an explanation on that, so I want you to explain that, because I haven't seen your most up-to-date one, but the last one I saw was Virginia was at $7.9 million. That's probably more with Malik Thomas, I think, has been added since then. But how did you kind of get those numbers?
Yeah, so these numbers came from a new tool that I have. It's specifically designed for teams, coaching staffs, front offices, general managers, for basically building rosters and figuring out what's the right amount of money to pay players. And so I built this tool that gives an estimation of how much every single player in Division I should be worth based on what my projections are for that player and how good they're going to be. And so kind of the way it works is my internal model basically figures out how much every player should be worth relative to everyone else. And then based on current intel that teams actually have, they can kind of use that to establish where the market's at in terms of how much the highest paid players are going for and things like this. And then it basically fills in how much everyone else should be worth based on kind of this current understanding of where the market's at. So with that being said, every single NIL amount that I associate with a player is not based on actual intel of how much they actually got or how much they're asking for. It's basically saying, given where the market is at this offseason, how much do my statistics think they are worth to really any team? And so when you add all of these figures up for a given team, it's not going to be exactly accurate as to what they paid them, but it's going to be ballpark pretty close, within a couple million of what they paid. And so the specific figures that I put out on Twitter was based on, again, these, it's ultimately kind of a, like, how much are all the transfers that you brought in worth in this current market, according to my model. That's kind of what it's saying. And so I said that I think this was before Malik Thomas, that Virginia's estimated NIL spending on just transfers was $7.9 million. That was top 10 in the country, what that's basically saying is that in the amount of money that would be expected they would have to spend is top 10. If Virginia only spent $5 million on those players, that means they got incredible bang for their buck. If they spent $10 million, that means they probably overspent a little bit. I know that there are, you know, Kentucky was near the top of that list, but people, it's been rumored that Kentucky spent a lot more money than that on those transfers they brought in on their roster as a whole. And so that just ultimately means that they went out and spent maybe more money than they needed to in order to get these quality of guys. Again, what they do with their money is that's totally their call. But to me, basically, I think that the main takeaway is one of the things with these lists is teams that had to go get lots of transfers are going to be higher on this list, because the per spend per transfer, I think based on that for Virginia, was about $1 million per transfer. But some of the other teams that were high in that list was more like $2 million or $2.5 million per transfer. So that's an important contextual point there. But it really does show that, you know, Virginia had to invest a lot of money in this roster in order to get the talent that they have. And that does not include, you know, some of the high profile, you know, freshmen and international players that they have coming in. And so it's good at least to see that they had to have that level of investment and are invested to get this level, this caliber of roster.
Yeah. Like, you know, it could be you underpaid or you overpaid, but that's like a good estimation. And like, I think the numbers being reported for Kentucky are around like 20 million. Then UNC had the article from Inside Carolina the other day that it was around 14 million for them. And so, yeah, Virginia probably had to spend a lot on transfers because they had to build a whole roster this offseason. So I think that's definitely a fair point. Let's get into some of the players, because if you go to your website and it has like the transfer classes, and the top player that you have for Virginia is Dalen Hall from BYU, the point guard. He's slowly becoming a little bit of a fan favorite. I mean, obviously we haven't seen any of these guys play in a Virginia uniform, but just, he seems like a pretty analytically driven type player. What have you liked from him?
Yeah, I think this is probably a general theme with a good number of the guys that Virginia has brought in, where I think kind of looking at where my statistics, kind of how good my model thinks these players are compared to the general public, I think Dalen Hall is probably one of these guys who is being very underrated and will be a much bigger impact player. You know, I don't think anything about his game specifically sticks out as being the most like, you gotta, you know, hop on television to watch this guy play. But that ultimately is not what leads to winning. What leads to winning is like making winning plays. And I think he is one of these guys who is going to be a big impact, and I have as the highest rated transfer that Virginia has coming in. So he's a top 40 transfer. He's one of, I think, about 50 guys in the country I was rated as a five-star transfer according to my model. I think specifically a lot of his value comes on the offensive end. He's top 20 in the portal in terms of his predicted offensive value. He's an elite playmaker. One of the things I do on my site is I have all of these individual player skill grades that basically says how good is this guy supposed to be in this particular quality going forward, accounting for his whole game history, who he's played, and his potential and things like that. And in the playmaking department, which takes into account assists and turnovers, he's in the top 1% nationally in this area. And so he's going to be really, really good on that front. He rarely turns the ball over for a point guard, so he's super secure. And of course, another really valuable commodity for any transfer is three-point shooting. And I wouldn't say that he's going to be maybe the best three-point shooter you've ever seen, but he's very efficient from three for a guy who's going to be kind of your floor general. And I give him a B letter grade in that overall, and I think that's going to be a really important quality as well. So I think when you look at BYU and their success the last several years, they've always been kind of have five or six or seven guys who really jump out, and all the individual players can get kind of lost in the shuffle. But I think Dalen Hall has been a key cog to why they've been successful, and so I'm really excited to see him in a Virginian uniform.
We mentioned him before, but the headliner right now is Malik Thomas from San Francisco. He got the waiver that everyone had been waiting for, so he has one more year of eligibility. Obviously led the WCC in scoring. Is there anything else about his game, or is the scoring just kind of that, you know, that real?
Well, the scoring definitely is his superpower. You know, he's got an A-plus grade in scoring volume on my site. He's one of the top 10 scorers, I think, in terms of predicted per possession scoring. He's one of the top 10 in the entire portal. And this is an interesting stat, of any of the players who are kind of the most high volume scorers in the portal available in these top 10, he has the best 3-point shooting grade and free throw shooting grade of any of them. He's top 4% nationally in both of those. And so sometimes you get these guys who can get you a bucket, but their efficiency in at least some of these areas is kind of questionable. And the fact that he is really good from deep and also really good when he gets to the line means that he's pretty hard to stop in any of these dimensions. He's just average in terms of like shooting inside the arc, which he does a lot. So I think that pulls him back just a little bit. But obviously I think that's part of why he's being brought in, is to be kind of, you know, potentially this team's alpha scorer. And I think when you pair him with a guy like Dallin Hall, who's really good at facilitating like that, I think that that really is exciting. I think maybe for some people, some might rate him a lot higher than how I have him as a top 40 transfer. And I think part of that is, you know, something that you alluded to. There's really not, statistically, there's not a lot else to his game. And I think something that you see, a trend that I've seen commonly that my models kind of account for, is when you have low major, mid major transfers who are volume scorers moving up a level to the high major level, and they don't really have another aspect of their game besides just the scoring that they're bringing. Sometimes these guys can really struggle. Not all the times, but oftentimes they can struggle to translate, especially if they're just sort of one dimensional in the sense of, was if you take away their scoring, they can't do a lot else. He falls in that camp. Definitely not to the degree that some other players do that I have ranked a lot lower, but I do think that is kind of one aspect that might be, you know, a little bit more cautious about him. And I think too, another aspect is like, how much does he actually impact winning, impact overall offensive success? Because when you looked at how San Francisco performed when he was on the court offensively, you know, if he is their best offensive player, they were only marginally better when he was on the floor versus on the bench. And so there's nothing in that sense, you know, even if he's scoring all the points, did that actually mean that he was being as helpful as what you would want from someone like that? That's a little bit of a question mark as well. It does not mean that he won't be very successful at Virginia, but just some different things I noticed that would, you know, point to why he's not maybe quite as highly ranked on in terms of my projections, or why he's not number one on the team coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll leave the floor to you, because we're not going to go through every single player, but is there any other one else that kind of stands out in your statistics and what you're looking at that maybe isn't getting as much attention as those other two guys?
That's a good question. I feel like, honestly, I think there's not really another player on the roster that I think, I guess maybe I point to Devin Tillis. I have him ranked as the third best transfer on the team, and his level is pretty close to the rating in terms of his overall predicted impact that I have for Dallin Hall and for Malik Thomas. And so, you know, I think those are going to be the two transfers that you're bringing in that for sure bring the most juice. And then obviously there's a lot of excitement for, you know, some of the other newer, international players coming in. But I think he has a good chance of being a high impact player on this team that maybe isn't being talked about quite as much. But once we start watching games, he could be having a big impact. So I'm curious to see what he does. And I think he was a really good get for this team.
One of the big things I wanted to talk to you about is, yeah, I'm getting ready to come out with a story about mid-majors kind of making that jump up a level, and how successful has that been, especially in this transfer portal era that we've seen. So just in my own research, you know, since 2022, I've had about 28% of Power 5 all-conference players have come from a mid-major background. 53% come from players you recruited out of high school. And so obviously, you know, the hope is that you get homegrown guys that kind of build up in your program, but only 18% come from other Power Fives. And I think a lot of times what I hear from fans is, well, we didn't get any Power Five guys. We didn't get any big guys from these other schools. We're getting, you know, these guys from lower conferences and everything. But a lot of times these mid-majors, there's a reason that they got overlooked. That happens in recruiting all the time. What have you seen from guys jumping up a level just over the years?
I think it's definitely hit or miss. I think that, you know, as I've had a lot of conversations with the coaches, they're often saying, like, we want to figure out how to get the next Dalton Connect. You know, there's names that can be attached to major success stories that no one saw coming. And my thing is, for every single Dalton Connect, there's also like 10 other players that were about that level of prestige coming that didn't end up being an all-conference or all-American player, and we just kind of forget about them. And so, I think it's hit or miss. I think the thing that really is important is guaranteeing that a mid-major player is going to be successful in their first season at the high major level is a little bit more questionable. But a lot of times when we talk about these guys who are mid-major to high major success stories, it's guys who transferred and then played for multiple years, like we talked about before. I mean, you look at this Final Four, we already mentioned Walter Clayton, you know, we already mentioned Will Richard. You look at Jahni Broome, he was at Morehead State and then played at Auburn for, what, 3 years? And it was one of the top two players in the whole country, but it took him 3 years to get there. And so in that sense, you can sort of think of like the recruiting at the mid-major level of just being another way of getting, you know, think of it similar to high school recruiting, where it's like we just have a lot more data now on how good this guy can be. And so if we recruit him to then at an early age to then come play for us for multiple years, you know, he can be successful. So I think when you talk about giving guys the opportunity to transfer up and then go through multiple years, then that's really where we see these success stories. And so I think that is the model where, you know, don't be too quick to judge a guy in one season, but if he's given the room to develop with that coaching staff, that's really all of a sudden where it's like, how do we miss this guy being so good? And it's like, well, it took some time, but he eventually got there. And so if you're willing to have that plan, it can be really successful.
Yeah, you mentioned the clear, obvious success stories, Walter Clayton, Jahni Broome, Mark Sears is another one that comes to mind. But just at Virginia, Andrew Rohde came from, you know, St. Thomas, where it was very low level of Division I basketball, put up great numbers there his freshman year, came to Virginia, really didn't have a good first year. And so everyone was ready to write him off. Ends up being the starting point guard and actually had a really good season for the last year, and then transferred to Wisconsin this offseason. So, yeah, sometimes it just takes a little bit of seasoning for some of these mid-major guys. Just kind of, you mentioned the international thing, because that is becoming such a big part of recruiting this offseason, especially. It seems like everyone is looking overseas for some new guys. Obviously, UVA, the big one, is bringing in German center Johan Grunlo, who was on NBA draft boards. And there's also a lot of rumors and connections with the Belgian forward and Tyce de Ridder. That one is still kind of playing itself out, especially with the NCAA, how much eligibility and all that stuff. That's a whole other part of all this international stuff. How do you account for international players in this kind of new age?
Yeah, I mean, the international movement is kind of all the buzz now. And I think it's, again, one of those examples where you look at the highest profile names in a season and you say, oh, wow, you know, Illinois was really successful with, you know, Kasperis Jakachonis, and BYU made a Sweet 16 with Yegor Demon. And so that's what we want. Well, there are also plenty of other international guys who were highly regarded last season who kind of did nothing. You know, I think, you know, Creighton had one of these players in Fedor Zugic, who came in and people thought he might be the best player, one of the best players on their team, and he basically was absolutely nothing. And so, again, it's going to be hit or miss. I think when I talk to coaches, and the general sentiment that I get is that there is almost like this kind of cachet that comes with, oh, we have a big international guy going in, but they're all just kind of thrown in the same bucket. And I don't think people are very good yet at figuring out what actually makes someone going to be a really, really productive player in college versus just like, you know, could be, have potential, but oftentimes it won't pan out. And so I think I think that this is a very viable method for recruiting. I think it is not a slam, none of these cases are slam dunks. And I think it takes a lot more time and film and even just like contextual adjustment for what league did you play? How old are you? What's the level of competition? A lot of this stuff people don't really have a grasp of. For me personally, the way that I do it is I kind of, for similar to how I have freshmen coming out of high school, I have a rough level of expectation for, you know, let's say a guy coming out of high school is the 20th ranked player in his class. Basically, the way that I establish a preseason projection or value for that player is looking at, based on other players in the last 10 to 15 years who have had a similar profile coming out of high school, play a similar position, how have these guys often actually fared in their first season in college? And that roughly forms a baseline for their preseason projection and then like how that builds into the overall assessment of the roster. I do a similar thing with international prospects where basically say, based on kind of consensus opinion on this guy, what level of player would he kind of correspond to if he was actually being ranked by the recruiting services as a freshman? Now, again, that can be very hit or miss, but the reality is that rating high school players is also extremely hit or miss. A lot of them end up being majorly impactful, but a lot of top 10, 15 guys like are kind of actually not that relevant in their first year of college, at least. So that's kind of how I do it, but it's not a science by any means. I think with a lot of these guys, we're not really going to know exactly how good they are until they actually start playing.
You talk about just the context that you've had with college coaches, and it seems like, you know, analytics has been part of college basketball for a number of years now. especially on the court, but it seems like it's having a much bigger role in how they're building rosters now. Because, I mean, back in, you know, the 2000s, early 2010s, it was just, all right, get as much talent on the roster, you know, Kentucky style, just get the best freshman on the roster, get as much talent as you can, we'll figure out the pieces later. And now it seems like coaches are going at this much more analytically and trying to figure out, all right, what pieces go together the best. And that's what Ryan Odom's talked about, is fitting the puzzle pieces together. Are you getting that sense from a lot of coaches now?
There's so much more skin in the game, because not only does every single coach have the ability to recruit any spot on their roster from fresh if they want through the portal, but also you're putting actual dollar amounts on the line. And when you're capped by the budget that your team, your athletic department, your collective is available for you, it all of a sudden makes a big difference for, are you spending this $1.4 million on a guy? Is he going to deliver or not? And so I think teams and coaches are realizing more every single year that it's really, really important to have as many tools at your disposal to make more accurate assessments of players. And I think specifically when it comes to the portal, you know, when a guy enters his name in the portal, you might have to put an offer on the table within 3 days in order to be seriously considered. Well, it's not like you've been scouting him in high school for 2 years and going to his games and watching tape. You have to make a quick assessment on, is this the kind of player that we want? Is he going to be at the level that we want? Is he going to fit the skill set and the specific positional need that we want? And that is why a lot of coaches use sites like mine for at least filtering down to say, like, this is the group of players we actually want to consider. And the analytics backup that he's going to be about this level of player, again, that can be high or low, but ballpark, it's going to be pretty accurate on the grand scheme of establishing and gathering this roster talent. And so it becomes more crucial than ever to have tools like that to make your, ultimately fiddle down your work to what really matters, because you don't want to have to be weeding through, you know, 20 new players entering the portal every single day, looking at all of their film and deciding. You need to have things that get you to that conclusion a lot quicker. And so I think it's become more important than ever because of how quick this stuff goes and how there's actual real money on the line. I think teams are getting smarter to learn using sites like mine to achieve their goals and much more successfully.
All right, Evan, we'll start to wrap up here. Looking kind of big picture for this next season, Ryan Odom, Virginia, we talked about this team, the ACC overall. You know, you've had a lot of new coaches, Will Wade come in at NC State, you know, Pat Kelsey in year two at Louisville. They've made a lot of big moves this offseason. Jay Lucas down at Miami has had a pretty decent portal run. Where do you kind of see Virginia fitting in the ACC picture, and where do you see the ACC next season? Because it's been a couple down years for the ACC. It's not what people that, you know, are used to following this conference are used to seeing, and there's a lot of talk about, you know, where can the ACC be in this new big picture, especially after what the SEC did last year? So you can start with the ACC, or you can start with kind of where you see Virginia.
Well, I think starting with the ACC, I haven't compiled my official preseason team ratings yet, and that'll probably be coming out in August or September. But I have been looking a lot at some of these rosters and getting a ballpark estimation of how good I think they're going to be. And I think big picture, I would expect the ACC – I think it's going to be really hard for the ACC to be as poor as they were last year ever again. Yeah. You know, I think some of it is understandable given the new teams that were added, and relatively speaking, these new teams are kind of towards the bottom in terms of talent. But I also think, too, something that we saw this offseason is that a lot of the older generation of coaching is being replaced. So, you know, NC State, Miami, Virginia being examples of that. And Florida State too. And so I think that is going to help modernize the ACC overall a little bit. And so I expect a lot of these teams, most of them, to be much better than they were last season. And so, no, I don't think the ACC, you know, is going to bounce back to being a top three conference in the sport necessarily. But I think it's going to be really, really hard for them to be as bad as they were last year. And I expect there to be a lot more teams in the NCAA conversation than were last year. I specifically really like the work that, you know, again, talking about teams in a similar situation to Virginia where you have a new coach and you have to have a whole new roster. I really, really like what NC State has done in their recruiting with Will Wade. I think he's absolutely nailed it. I think they're going to be a surefire NCAA tournament team and potentially a lot better than that. I think Jay Lucas at Miami has done a pretty good job of bringing in a lot of pieces, retooling that roster. It'll be interesting to see what they do, but you know, he could have done a lot worse there. And so a lot of these teams with these new rosters, you know, I think have done a pretty good job overall. And so I feel pretty confident the ACC is going to be not quite as hopeless as last year. Let's put it that way.
There you go. How about Virginia? I know you still got Duke and UNC looming out there. UNC spent a lot of money. You could argue there's some flaws in the roster. Duke, obviously, another big freshman coming in and another decent class that they've got to put together.
Yeah, I think for Virginia, I don't know where I'd stack in the ACC, but I think there's a decent chance that if things go well, they would finish top five in the ACC. And I think just kind of looking at the pieces that they've brought in, I think that my model and my statistics point to players like, as I mentioned, Dallin Hall and Devin Tillis being an even higher impact than what people think. And I think a lot of times when you're looking at rosters, it's like the fresh new pieces, especially when you're talking about like freshmen coming in at Duke, that really grab the headlines that people are really drawn to. But I think it's the reliable veterans, like a lot of these pieces that Virginia have brought in, that actually really make, push a team from being like on the outside the bubble to being like firmly in the picture. And so I really like this roster, and I think that they could sue. Honestly, I could see them having a similar path to what Louisville did last year in, having a first-year head coach and being surprisingly successful. I mean, Louisville was by the end of the season, clearly a top 2 to 3 team in the ACC. Up until the final week of the season, they were even battling with Duke to have the best record in the conference. I'm not claiming that Virginia is going to do that, but I would not be surprised if they were kind of in a similar boat. Again, obviously, there's a lot of potential outcomes here when you have a new roster and a new head coach, but I'm pleasantly optimistic about where things could go this year.
Yeah, I think people are starting to get there, but a lot to see with this roster all coming together for the first time, just in a couple of weeks in Charlottesville. But Evan Miakow, one of the best in the business. Evan, thanks for coming on today. If you're interested in what you heard today, you can go to evanmia.com and see all these amazing just statistics and everything. It's helped me a lot with my work too. But Evan, thanks for so much for coming on the Who's On podcast.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thank you.
All right, that'll do it for the Who's On podcast. We will check back in with you later next week. For now, thanks for listening.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.